church, and we're going to continue our series in the book of Daniel. Why don't we begin a story about a small church in West Texas, a church that was undergoing a renovation. And as they were doing this renovation, they were mostly through the renovation. They had the sanctuary that was redone. They put a baptistry in, but they hadn't built yet the change rooms behind the baptistry. But this is a Southern Baptist church, and the pastor was here to have a baptismal service, and so we called for baptisms, and just like we're going to be going to baptism service here on Easter Sunday, and so a few candidates came forward, so that Sunday morning they had the baptism service, and everything was going along fine until the last lady stepped into the tank, and that you should remember her fear of water. Some of you are like that. You've got a fear of water, because you stepped into the tank, and she began thrashing and floundering in the water, and as she's thrashing out, she grabbed the only thing that was close to her, which was the curtain. And she grabbed the curtain and pulled it down, which was the curtain where the guys were chained down.
Around his waist,
His body was like topaz, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and his voice was like the sound of a multitude. I, Daniel, was the only one who saw the vision. Those who were with me did not see it, but such terror overwhelmed them that they fled and hid themselves. Okay, so Daniel chapter 10, heavenly vision, someone appears before him that's like a man, but it's not a human being. He looks like a man, he's more than a man, he's got a face like lightning, eyes which are flaming torches, a voice, is like a crowd speaking. We're not sure exactly who it is. Could be an angel. It certainly sounds like Jesus, a pre-Bethlehem appearance of Jesus. Certainly the language is similar to Revelation chapter 1, which I've covered in your outline there. And among the lampstands was someone like the Son of Man, dressed in a robe, reaching down to the sea, and with a golden sash around his chest. The hair on his head was white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were like blazing fire. His feet were like bronze glowing in the furnace, and his voice was like the sound of rushing waters. His face was like the sun shining in all its brilliance. So there in Revelation chapter 1, John has this vision of Jesus. And like I said, the language is very similar here in verses 4 to 7 here. And in Revelation 1, John just falls down as if he's dead before this amazing vision and glory of God that Jesus Christ exudes. Here in Daniel chapter 10, my guess is that this is Jesus in front of him, but later there's also an angel, which we'll get to in a second, that Daniel's companions who are with him, they don't see this vision, but somehow they recognize the glory of God, that something in the invisible realm is real, and Daniel has some insight into it, and as a result, they fit right away in fear. Now the angel speaks to Daniel, verse 12, let's pick it up. Then he continues, "Do not be afraid, Daniel. This is the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before God. Your words were heard, and I have come in response to them. But the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days. Then Michael, one of the chief princesses, came to help me because I was detained there with the king of Persia. Now I have come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns the time yet to come." So this appears to be a different being than what I read earlier in verses 4 to 7, that great man, non-man, who was standing before him. Just because this celestial being is detained by a demon until spiritual reinforcements arrive in heaven. And there's no doubt to me that Jesus, he's more powerful than any demonic warrior, that there's no way any demon could hold him. But here somehow, this angelic being is detained by the demonic forces until the reinforcements arrive. We get some more insight into the unseen world, verse 20. So he says, Do you know why I have come to you? This is the angel speaking to Daniel. Soon I will return to fight against the prince of Persia. And when I go, the prince of Greece will come. But first I will tell you what is written in the book of truth. No one supports me against them except Michael, your prince. And so we got more description of the good and the evil beings. And notice there that the demons are given territory to cover. Almost like a salesperson who, in our day and age, would be given to a certain region. Okay, you've got to cover the lower mainland. You've got BC as your territory. Here the demons are given territory to cover. And they're mentioned by name, the geographical region. The Persia, and Greece as two territories to cover. Now I'm just wondering, if back then there were territorial spirits that were assigned to certain regions, is it not legitimate to think that in our day and age, there are also demonic forces that are given certain territories and regions to cover? That there are perhaps the prince of Delta, or the fallen angel of Surrey, or the demon warrior of Whitebrow, or the dark angel of Langley, that certain principalities and powers oversee certain areas. This chapter, it's a haunting chapter. It's a difficult chapter, isn't it? But it reminds us that angels and demons exist. And it reminds us that angels and demons are engaged in spiritual combat. How they fight in the unseen world we really don't know. But somehow, they are engaged in conflict. Where they're engaged, we also don't know. It almost appears to me that they are right beside us, but in another dimension, in another realm, that they are engaged in this spiritual combat. And most importantly for us, from an application point of view, is that our prayers affect those battles that are taking place. Perhaps by summoning good angels on our behalf, or by summoning good angels on someone else's behalf, in order to fight for us and to combat the evil and the corruption and the destruction that the demonic forces want to bring. Edward Cooper, who was a former Prime Minister of the Netherlands, who was a brilliant theologian back in the 1800s, he wrote these words: "If once the curtain were pulled back and the spiritual world behind it came to view, it would expose to our spiritual vision a struggle so intense, so convulsive, sweeping everything within its range, that the fiercest battle ever fought on earth would seem by comparison a mere game. Not here but out there, that is where the real conflict is waged. Our earthly struggle drones in its backlash." The great war. Not a war of guns and bullets, but a war that's just as real. And we would be amiss to take one or two extremes on this chapter. See, one extreme would be to become obsessed by it. And there have been entire books written about Daniel chapter 10. And they have very elaborate schemes and strategies in those books regarding the territorial spheres and the demonic forces. Those books talk at length about, strategies and plans to engage the underworld. But I notice here, Daniel kind of leaves that up to God. But it would be just or worse to have the other extreme, to pretend that the curtain doesn't exist, that there is no underworld, that there are no angels and demons engaged in spiritual conflict, and to just somehow live pretending that this other world doesn't exist. Because this chapter reminds us that it's very real. And if you're like me, you can easily forget about that reality in the day-to-day life. We live in a very beautiful part of the world. We all agree on that, right? Especially now in spring. We've been waiting for this, and it's so beautiful here. And some of you, when you go somewhere on a holiday, you go on a hike or something, you sometimes will show me a picture of somebody at the church and say, "Hey, look where it was. It was so beautiful," and it is beautiful. Or through the winter, somebody shows me pictures from Mount Skeen and being up on the mountains, the beauty that we have in all seasons here. But through the biblical writers, they saw the world very differently. Yes, they saw the beauty, but there is these demonic forces that are hell-bent on your destruction and on my destruction. And through the biblical writers, they would see it kind of like, I'm going to pick up this picture from Syria. Some kids going to school. And we've all seen those pictures the last few years coming out of Syria. The utter destruction that has happened there. And that, in a sense, is how the biblical writers see our world. But not a destruction of buildings, but a destruction of God's creation that these demonic warriors are attempting to do, to destroy everything that God has created, and particularly the pinnacle of God's creation, which is people. And they are hell-bent on doing whatever they can. And if they could take your very soul, they would attempt to do it. The battle is very real. We live in it, but we don't see it. A couple of years ago, I went to an RCMP presentation at the Bell Center around drugs in Surrey here. And I remember the officer putting a flowchart up on the screen, and actually reached out to the RCMP if they could give me a flowchart, but I never heard back from them. But I remember it. They got the box up on the top, and then they got the box but some company, you know? And we have here, they're here in Daniel chapter 10, the territorial spirits. And I wonder if in hell, there's this elaborate flowchart of setting on the top, you know, and demon overlords underneath, et cetera, et cetera. And they are involved in trying to bring about the destruction of our world. Perhaps this flowchart, even somehow corresponds to the flowchart that I saw at the Bell Center. Because the war is a great war, and it's a very real war. And we need to be aware of this war, but not only to be aware of it, we need to answer the call to engage in this great war. Daniel has given us insight into this battle between heaven and hell, between the angels and the demons. And what's his response? Verse 2. At that time, I, Daniel, mourned for 3 weeks. I ate no choice food. No meat or wine touched my lips, and I used no lotion at all until the 3 weeks were over. So Daniel was again engaging in fasting, you know, similar to what we saw in Daniel chapter 1, where he engages in a 10-day fast. Here he does it for 3 weeks. He chooses to only eat food which is grown from the seed, you know, so fruits and vegetables, drinking water. I put it on your fast, your outline there. The Daniel fast consists of eating fruit, vegetables, and grains. It's eating only that which grows from the seed along with drinking water. In the negative sense, it eliminates meat, dairy, and sugar from one's diet for the purpose of seeking God. That's the important thing. It's about seeking God. It's not about weight loss. It's about seeking God. Daniel, as I also mentioned, he's been abstaining from body lotions there. So he lives in a hot Middle East climate. He knows that they have oils that come in their hair and on their skins. And he's mourning over sin. And he's calling on spiritual reinforcements for this 3 week period. I'm not sure what's happening exactly there, why that is. You know, now historically, Daniel chapter 10, some of the exiles have actually gone back to Jerusalem. But Daniel wasn't one of those who went back to Jerusalem, probably because of his age, he's too old to venture back there. But no doubt he's overjoyed that some of the Jewish people could head back to Jerusalem. They started rebuilding the temple, but then something happens, and they stop that. Perhaps he's concerned about that. And he knows behind all human conflict, there is spiritual conflict in the background. That there's a real warfare going on in the heavenly places, behind all human conflict. There are evil spirits who are assigned superterrestrial reasons to cover. So here this angel is speaking with Daniel. He's being told about the opposing forces. And he's told how his prayers make a difference. Did you catch that in verse 12? The angel says, don't get afraid, Daniel. This is the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding. Now humble yourself before your God. Your words were heard, and I have come in response to them. Again, underline that in your brief Bible. Your words were heard, and I have come in response to them. What if Daniel hadn't prayed? Would the angel have not shown up? We saw the same thing last week in Daniel chapter 9. I put it on your outline, verse 23. The moment you began praying, a command was given, and now I am here to tell you what it was, for you are very precious to God. And I loved how the theme last week ended on that thought of the preciousness to God. We'll see that here in chapter 10 also in a few moments. But that first line there, verse 23, you can underline your own line. The moment you began praying, a command was given. Incredible, right? Pastor Chris prays the word, and somehow an angel is summoned. What's the praise in Mandarin? And somehow the heavenly forces are deployed. If you and I pray and affect what is happening in the invisible world. Here in chapter 10, your words were heard, and I have come in response to them. Friends, what if you and I don't pray? What are we missing out on? Because it's not engaging in the great war. We need to be aware of it, we also need to engage with it. Our prayers make a difference. And perhaps like Daniel, some of us need to remove the distractions which inhibit our ability to engage in the spiritual realm. We are in the middle of Lent. We are getting ready for for the biggest day in the Christian calendar, which is what day? Easter, right? That's our biggest day. We gather the other 51 Sundays a year to remind ourselves that Jesus is alive. That's the reason for our gathering. So Lent is a season of focusing upon God, of fasting, of mourning, of removing distractions. How's that going for you? I know for me, it started real slow. Last Wednesday of the year was my daughter's birthday. We're going out to campus club. I didn't want to pass. Not that day. I'll start the next day. But then the next day, I thought, well, Friday is Rachel's tomb. And you know, I spent 30 bucks to admit this, and I don't want to just eat vegetables, you know. Because, you know, I heard the bill was $1,500 for salmon, and I don't want to see any good food going to waste, you know. And then I said, well, I'll start after that. And the next week, I was thinking, you know, Gather my sword, get out things. Has it really made a difference? Like, I don't know if you've ever been in that headspace, but you kind of wonder, you know, I wake up Easter Sunday and I go, I'm better off because, you know, because I gave up chocolate or gave up meat or gave up something else or for Lent. Like, that just doesn't do anything within me. And I start wondering about prayers and the times that I fasted and prayed and, you know, far more spiritual than I am. But I sometimes have those wonders in my own head. But I've got a plan now. And what about you? See, today is the first day of the rest of Lent. And it's 21 days till Easter Sunday. Here, Daniel, he abstains from choice food for 21 days. So what would be your choice food? What could you give up? Whether it's food or pleasure or some appetite or screens or whatever to help you focus the next 21 days. Because the battle is real. See, if you would ask me, is prayer important? I'd say, oh yeah, prayer is important. And sure, all of us would say, yes, prayer is important. We believe in prayer. But if you would ask me, is prayer essential? Then you have to look. You have to look at my schedule. You have to look at my calendar. You have to look at my heart. You have to look at my attitude to see, do I just cognitively give a mental assent to prayer being important? Or do I believe in my heart of hearts that prayer is absolutely crucial and essential, and that's how I live my life, that I'm absolutely dependent upon God? And then I need him. What about you, friends? Serve as a burden. Burden believing. And then praying. And then praying through. And as we just read, heavenly beings are deployed when you and I pray. For 21 days here, Daniel chose to abstain from choice food. For 21 days, we read there, the demon opposed the angelic being until reinforcements came from heaven. What does the next 21 days till Easter Sunday look like for you? See, most of us think of prayer, it's easy to think about prayer, as kind of a defensive weapon. We even talk about things like going on a prayer retreat, or I'll pray about it, or I'll go to a quiet place for prayer and solitude. And certainly that is one aspect of prayer. But it's also, Daniel 10 reminds us, an offensive weapon whereby we call on our heavenly commander and he hears us. Because the enemy is trying to take up the communication lines. Just like in a battle in the earthly realm, like what happens in a war, they take up the communication lines. And your enemy is trying to take up your communication lines with your heavenly commander. But your heavenly commander wishes to give you messages that you are called to receive and to obey. And it's up to you and I to move forward as we engage in the battle. Because the enemy wants to destroy you. The enemy wants to destroy everything that you believe in and that you love. But by prayer is a powerful tool whereby we somehow handicap the enemy. We somehow deter the enemy. We somehow foil the schemes of the evil one in our world and in our lives. And friends, it's taken our life. See, the Bible says that following Jesus is more than just coming here on Sunday mornings, singing some sweet songs, and listening to a sermon. It's about engaging in battle. And Jesus is interested in more than just building church attendance. He wants that men and women who live up the calling to follow him and to engage in this warfare. So friends, what does that look like for you the next 3 weeks? Because as you cry out, see, one word prayer, when you say the word, help, angelic beings are summoned by that one word. When you intercede on someone's behalf or on your own behalf, someone in the spiritual realm, things happen. So friends, what do the next 3 weeks look like to you? To answer the call, to engage in this great war. See, because in verse 20 reminds us, so he said, the angel speaking to Daniel, do you know why I come to you? Soon I will return to fight against the prince of Persia. When I go, the prince of Greece will come. For first I will tell you what is written in the book of truth. No one supports me except them, against them, except Michael, your prince. This battle is an ongoing battle, right? It's not a one-time thing, and then it's done. It's not for the faint of heart, but we receive encouragement through Christ in the midst of this battle. And we see this again in this chapter. Daniel chapter 8. Three times in this chapter, we read, like in verse 18. Again, the one who looked like a man touched you and gave me strength. Three times in this chapter, the heavenly being, whether it's angel or whether it's Jesus there, touches Daniel to strengthen and encourage him. He gets this celestial first aid in the battle. And not only is he compassionately touched by the heavenly being, but he also is reminded of his identity in Christ. Because sometimes in the battle, we lose that focus and we forget who we are, who we truly are. And so we read verses like verse 19. So why don't we stick verse 19 up on the screen. Let's read it together. Don't be afraid, he said, for you are very precious to God. Peace. Be encouraged. Be strong. So this is the angel speaking to Daniel. And he gives him this fourfold message. That he tells us to not be afraid. And for some of us, is that the message we need to hear this morning? In a shifting culture, as you found yourself becoming fearful, is there some fear that's keeping you up at night? You need the word from the Lord this morning to not be afraid. Because friends, even this kind of chapter can sometimes make us fearful. But I remind you, greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. With God as your helper, you need not fear. Second promise there is a promise of peace. Some of us in this last season were worried, we're anxious. And today, perhaps, you need to surrender that to the Lord. Give it over. The anxiety that's in your head. See, the greatest battle to the opposing forces against you are happening between your ears, right? The psychological battles that he wages, the demonic forces wage against you. And some of us are just bent out of shape with worry and say, we need to just again trust and receive that gift of peace from him. The third thing the angel said, be encouraged, be strong. Some of us may be discouraged. If it's even tough for you to come here this morning, you feel like throwing in the towel. Well, the reminder from God is to be encouraged, to be strong. That this is ultimately Christ's battle. Yes, we've got to fight in it, but ultimately we know who the victor is. Yes, there are demonic forces on your street, in your school, in your workplace, in our church, in our city, but ultimately those fallen angels of Surrey, White Rock, and Miami and Delta will go down because Christ is the victor. And notice what the heavenly being calls sin precious. Everybody say that word precious. I hear the precious. Some of you in translation say highly because we still got engaged. To refuse to engage is to take a spiritual bullet. And we know that this is more than just a cosmic struggle between good and evil, between light and darkness. We know, in the end, who will win. It's like we know the final score. But we still have to dress up and get out on the playing field and engage in this battle. And Christ will give us the strength to do that. So friends, do you need to be reminded of your identity? That through the cross, what Jesus has done for you, that you are God's son, you are God's daughter. Live in that. Live in that. And perhaps to have to give over to Christ your fear this morning. Or to give over to Him your anxiety. To receive that encouragement, that strengthening from Him. First, just me wanting to come up here to you as we pray. So what does God want to say to you this morning from this chapter? He calls you His precious one, His beloved. With the values of your